from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Hi, I'm Travis DiNicola, and today I'll meet 12-year-old author, artist, actress, and philanthropist Victoria Martin.
Wow, I'll find out about the education programs that take place at Clues Memorial Hall.
And then I'll chat with artist Flounder Lee about how he maps his travels, performances, and photography. Plus, we'll also have our arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Twelve-year-old Victoria Martin is an author, an artist, an actress, and a philanthropist. Proceeds from her illustrated book titled The $100 Sock are going to support an orphanage in Guatemala. For the holidays, though, she's taking a break from writing because she's performing the role of Belinda in the IRT's A Christmas Carol. Travis DiNicola chatted with Victoria last month about her book.
Victoria, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you in our studio today.
Hey, thank you.
You are very welcome. I always love chatting with authors, and especially young and first-time authors, right? This is your first book.
Right.
Okay, just to be clear. So tell me a bit how this all came about. Why did you decide to, in the first place, to write and publish and illustrate a book? And the title being The $100 Sock. Tell me how this came about.
Well, really, this had actually happened to my family, so I had a good place to start.
The story that you tell.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so I've always loved to publish books, or not publish, write books.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted to publish a book because I thought it would be very interesting, and I really wanted to be an author. So I asked my mother for for my birthday, mm-hmm. if I could publish this book. And she said yes, that I could. So for my birthday, from my relatives, I got money and stuff to publish it.
Okay. And then you decided, which is something very cool, I mean, not just to publish it, but you're actually using the proceeds from the book to help others.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that.
Okay. Well, my church, we do a mission trip at the Hogar Rafael IU Orphanage in Guatemala City.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always wanted to go on that mission trip, but I think I'm a little too young.
Okay.
But I really wanted to help them because it's an orphanage and it's kids like my age, older and younger. And I don't know, I just thought it would be pretty cool to help other kids.
So you're going to send some of the proceeds from the book to help out the kids in Guatemala at that orphanage.
Correct.
That's fantastic. Now, how old do you have to be to go on a mission or go to visit that? When you're later in high school, maybe?
I don't know. Probably.
Okay. Keeping your fingers crossed on that.
Yes.
One. Well, why don't we go ahead and have you read the book to us, if you don't mind. If you're ready to go, I'd love to hear you read The $100 Sock. And I'm curious to find out what makes a sock worth $100.
Okay. $100 sock. My mother washed the laundry day after day. She washed the whites with the whites, the reds with the reds, the dark colors with the dark colors, and the light colors with the light colors. One day, during the washer made a sound like never before. It gurgled, then gargled. It spluttered, then it stopped. Suddenly, soapy water spewed everywhere. It got on the coats and on the rug, and it leaked through the floor and dripped into the basement. "Why is water," said my brother, "everywhere?" "Oh, no," my mother and father shouted in unison. "Call the repairman," said mother. "Up to bed, Nathaniel," said father. But Nathaniel started. My parents ordered, "Go to bed." We dashed up the stairs. The next day, the repairman came. He looked at the washer. In the gears, he found nothing. He looked everywhere. Just when he was about to give up, he found a sock. "This is what was clogging up your washer," he mentioned to my mother. "That will be $100. The sock was grimy. It looked like it had been chewed on. It had been mutilated. Later, my mother said, as she was throwing the sock in the trash, "What an expensive sock." The end.
Well, and a terrific reading you've just done. I'm only so sorry that people can't see the great illustrations that you've made as well, because there's some really fun pictures that you drew for this book, too. Now, of course, if they buy it, and they can buy it through Amazon, right?
Right.
Then they can see what the great illustrations look like. You also have some illustrations there of your family and your dog in the back.
Right.
Yes. Floss?
Floss, yes.
Very nice. Very nice. So what has been, what's the response been to the book? You've been able to share it with family and friends and now some more people?
Yes. Actually, I sell some stuff at church.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done multiple things in different places at different libraries, like the library, Hussey Mayfield Memorial.
Okay.
And then another library. I don't remember. Okay. And so I've been doing stuff there, and then actually I think I've been giving it to my relatives, and they've been giving it out to multiple people. And my grandfather, he said, "Okay, so you're getting money for the book, but your grandmother is just giving out for free."
Well, I hope they'll be making a donation to the orphanage or something, I'm sure. So what are your plans for your next book?
Well, currently, I do multiple stuff for different books, and currently I'm writing a book about it's Greek mythology, because I really like Greek mythology, and so I'm writing a book about Athena, because she's like, I think she's the number one goddess.
Oh, she's pretty cool.
Yeah, and so then another book I'm doing it with my brother and sister, and it's about fairies. So, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Excellent.
And then I'm writing a play, a skit thing, and it's about, like, some different elements, and they're in human form. And then,
like, earth and fire and water and air. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so for some reason, their father, who is the universe, he's decided to make them go camping.
Mm-hmm.
So I just find writing interesting, and I like to write because I don't know where it's going to take me.
Well, that's part of the process of discovery. Victoria, it has been a real pleasure getting to know you, chatting with you, hearing you read your book, and I look. Okay, and we're back in 3, 2, 1. Victoria, I want to ask you about one other thing. I understand you've actually sent the book to the kids in the orphanage, but you've had a translator, right?
Right. So, I sometimes do a little Spanish, so I kind of understood what I was writing. And so I translated it into Spanish, and we took we cut it all out and taped it into the book, so it was nice.
That's great. And then you got a note from the kids?
Correct. So we got a note, and it was in Spanish, and they said thank you and everything. And I don't know, I just found it really, really nice, because, I mean, they didn't have to do anything.
Yeah. Well, do you think they understand what you're doing? I mean, that you're selling this book to raise money for them?
Yes, I think they do.
Excellent. Very good. Well, I do hope you get to make that trip someday as well.
Travis DiNicola with 12-year-old author, artist, actress, and philanthropist Victoria Martin. Her book, The $100 Sock, is available on Amazon. You can see her perform the role of Belinda in the IRT's A Christmas Carol as part of the Red Team. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Clues Memorial Hall on the campus of Butler University is famous for hosting great touring performers and Butler's own artist, but there's another side to Clues as well. Thousands of students and teachers benefit from the organization's educational outreach and training programs. Sharon invited Clues Education Manager Cassandra Pixie and Community Relations Manager James Kramer in to learn more.
There is a vast world behind the scenes at Clues Memorial Hall in the education programs that the general public may not know much about. So I was curious, and that's my main motivation for asking you here. Cassandra, you're in a particularly good position to have the big picture view of that, because you worked at Clues right out of undergraduate school a few years ago.
Yes, I was there in the mid-90s and came back to the hall about 2 years ago or so, in the spring of 2009. So it's been an interesting evolution to see it then and now.
What's changed? What's changed most?
You know, I think the landscape of the arts community has changed. And from the mid-90s, it was a real boom time, I think, of financial giving and support of the arts, especially arts and education. And now the priorities of funders are a lot different, and the priorities of schools have changed a lot with the evolution of No Child Left Behind, which thankfully is about to make some big changes.
Mm-hmm.
And so schools and their needs have changed a lot. So our primary work in kindergarten, or really preschool through grade 12, is to serve the needs of schools and teachers and administrators. And so as their needs change, we need to respond to what we offer and provide.
Sure. And I know, in addition to having the probably the most visible piece of your series of programs is student matinees, but in addition to that, you do teacher workshops, distance learning, and explain in layman's terms what curriculum-based programming is.
You know, that's, I think we, my colleague Donna Run, she's the education coordinator, and I, we talk about it all the time. And as both of us are parents and providers of services to schools, gosh, a lot of parents aren't that informed, unfortunately, about curriculum and the things that are happening in our schools. So teachers have standards and specific things they must address in the classroom. And so it may look to the layman as simple as, oh, they're doing a performance of Charlotte's Web. Isn't that nice?
Mm-hmm. Isn't that sweet?
Isn't that
I remember
nice?
Reading that.
Yeah. But there are real specific standards, they call them, within curriculum that teachers need to address in language arts. And then there are art standards as well in theater. And so we write a study guide to address those learning standards for the classroom teacher so that they can go back into the classroom and it's not a field trip anymore. And it honestly hasn't been for probably about 20 years, and that's a long time, but that teachers are really looking at what the kids are learning when they come into the theater, and it's a learning extension from the classroom. So it's not a field trip anymore.
No, it's not just to see something different, although I'm sure to the kids, even though there's very objective goals. The kids are still excited to get out of the classroom and just see something on stage.
The kids are having a fun time. I think all the wonderful things that happen with the learning of the student is why we're there and why we're doing what we do. But the best part of my job is a show day when we're bringing in 2,000 kids and they walk into the lobby of Clues Hall and they look up to that ceiling that's so high and they go, wow! Especially when they're at-risk kids, whether you label that as inner city kids or kids from rural parts of Indiana that have maybe never been in a theater before or ever on a university campus. So it's a real positive, amazing experience for the kids.
It is kind of like a cathedral, walking into Clues Hall the first time.
Oh, the Cathedral of the Arts. Maybe we should start calling it that.
I like that, yes.
How often do the education curricula change, and is that governed? That's governed at the state level, correct?
It is. It is. Gosh, I don't know if you ever want to go that far on Art of the Matter to bring in someone from the Department of Education.
We should, actually.
Yeah.
We should.
Yeah. I don't know the exact schedule that things change on, but, you know, yes, the U.S. Department of Education provides funding down to the states, and each state ties what their curriculum standards are back to the national standards. Now, there's going to be some localized decisions within the state on how they interpret those standards, but it seems that it's about an every 10-year cycle. The first round of No Child Left Behind, I believe it was, I don't want to state of the year, but it was about a decade ago. It was under the second Bush administration.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just within the last week or so that they announced that there's some changes coming. So we hope that they're positive changes for all of us.
Mm-hmm. James, from your perspective as community relations manager, what are you most excited about in the education programs? What Cassandra talked about her, oh, this is why I do this. This is why I slave at my desk for too many hours every week, walking in and seeing these kids have this experience. What do you love about this?
Very, very similar, because when we bring in performances for our Clues Presents, and we can do some outreach or some master classes, lecture demos, in any way that we can reach either to the university student, to the community at large, in a conversation, to actually see that fulfilled You know, we do all this planning, and when we were actually there and you see the reaction of the audience to that performer and what they're bringing, it really is exciting. And when we really load those up, because we have the artists in for maybe a day or two in advance, so we really try to get the most out of that and have as many activities as we can. So I almost go into overload because you're running from one thing to the next to the next. And it's very, very exciting to see that and to see how the whether they be the public or the student, really blossom, if you will, that they you see a recognition on their face of what they're speaking of their life as an artist or what they're bringing in a masterclass setting, and you see the light bulbs go off. You see the students' faces and their bodies respond to this in such a positive way that it finally connects for them. And this is what, you know, we've been working toward in the classroom up to this point. Now to have it rounded out by, a really known professional to come in and share that experience with them, it's really very profound.
Now, is there any kind of a clearinghouse that you book artists through? Are you having to deal directly with the agents and representatives? Or
we do. We work directly with the agents, and depending on the size of the artist company, if it's a large dance company or something, they may have a lot of different people in the mix. But we work with the managers and the agents to look at those artists, and specifically with Clues Presents and the work that James does, we're bringing in an artist looking at their potential to do lifelong learning or education activities. There's something tied to every single performance, be it something as simple as a pre-performance talk with a local expert or someone from the professional company sitting in. You know, it's a real decision maker for both our preschool through grade 12 education to say what can it do? How can it serve the needs of our community? And Clues Presents in the evenings.
Sure. So we're bringing it in for primarily adult audience, but it's like how long can we keep this person here? How many other audiences can we get this person or this group or this act in front of?
And more and more of them are coming with a very extensive education program within their own communities, especially when you're dealing with an artist who has a home base. You know, with a lot of the dance companies, as Cassandra mentioned, will have that, and they have a fully developed educational branch. So they have a program that's just very easy to just slip into what we have, because there is a commonality. You know, what they have in their community, the same needs we have in ours. And we need to address that. And here is an opportunity to bring in someone who can, as we say, inspire those youth or those adults in a different way than maybe they've had by their, you know, local group or performer. It somehow brings a little bit of different attention and recognition to it. So it's a great program.
I think we've seen a lot of that with the work with the next generation groups, you know, that are looking at and how we can make the arts more accessible. And the fear of art, to make it go away kind of thing, to have these access points of, it's not just come and sit down in a dark theater and experience passively an art form, but how can I engage with the art form in some way? And that's what the community work is all about.
I've been on campus on days when there are student matinees, and it's just a sea of school buses, and it's so cool. How many student matinees do you have in a typical season, and how many students are you serving?
So that's what when I tell people what I do, and I say, have you ever seen all the buses at Clues Hall? And they're like, oh, yeah. I said, it's a show day. So on an average year, we'll have about 35,000 students and teachers through the doors. That's both through the daytime matinees and the work that James is doing in the community. And we have typically about 34 performances. Now, that's usually two performances of one show title. So it's maybe 15 or so different titles, different shows that are coming in. And, you know, it varies based on the year and what's on the road, because we're not working with local artists for our performances. We're what's called a roadhouse. There's a whole education within us. So we're working with professional touring children's theater companies coming from all across the country.
And the students and teachers, are they coming from primarily central Indiana, or are you able to lure them from a little farther away?
When we do a lot of statistical analysis, you know, for our funders and things. And so we're serving about 34 counties out of the state of Indiana, so
wow,
about a third. And we kind of look at that middle swath across central Indiana. However, Indianapolis is perfectly located. Someone in our northwestern part of the state can jump on I-65 and they're here in two and a half hours.
Right.
So we do pull from the corners of the state as well, depending on how a teacher wants to use their time. So we do reach those farther corners as well.
And for those people for whom it's not quite as practical to do that, you have distance learning. Is that used a lot?
We would like to use it a lot more. We do use it, and it's, you know, it for the layperson, distance learning has many different things, but what we're using is almost like a Skype. I think most people know what Skype is these days.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that, but it's a similar video conferencing type software. And so we can connect with multiple schools at one time, or what we call a point-to-point, where we're talking directly to that classroom. And we've done some in Canada. We've reached all,
wow,
all across the United States with talking about simple things like turning a novel into a play, careers in the arts, a variety of things. But it's become a much more affordable technology, and schools are utilizing it, and we'd love to reach more. Mm-hmm. So call us. We'd love to talk to you.
and you also do teacher workshops. They can leave the kids behind and come. And these, I would imagine, also are aimed at fulfilling particular curriculum requirements.
Absolutely. We've been very lucky that we've been part of the Kennedy Center Partners in Education program since its founding in 1991, so we've been at it a long time. And it's really looking at that balance of using arts in the general classroom. So, of course, we want to work with arts specialists, music teachers, visual arts teachers, and so on, but the perfect example is bringing in a fourth grade teacher and teaching them how to use maybe historical images like photography, and how they can talk about photography and visual imagery in their social studies curriculum. You know, a teacher might not be comfortable with that, or how they could use music to talk about history and things like that. So it's got very specific curriculum standards. We get them in and out in 3 hours because teachers are busy people, and they go back with skills and tools they can use right in their classroom, using the arts every day in their classrooms.
Another aspect of lifelong learning, and it's so important, especially for teachers who've been doing their job for a long time. They get that added little perk of, oh, this is why I'm in the business.
Mm. Hopefully. I would say our evaluations, teachers leave with glowing reviews and saying, I can use this right away. It's simple. It's easy. I'm not feeling threatened, like I don't know how to sing or dance, but they feel comfortable and energized and inspired to go back and try some new teaching strategies in their classroom to teach content that they may have been teaching for many years, but new ways to do it.
And because you're on a major university campus, you're also connecting to Jordan College of Fine Arts students, Education College students, and planning on doing more of that, I understand?
Yeah, I think that we're trying to work more interdepartmentally. You know, it's something that is there. It's low-hanging fruit. It's
sure,
an obvious opportunity, however you want to describe that. You know, we're sitting with people who are looking how to improve their lives, and if we can provide them something through the arts that will help that. And, you know, it's what we've done with the pre-K through 12 program. It's learning in a different way, and maybe this person is going to finally respond to something because they saw something on stage that inspired them. So yes, we're going to be doing a lot more as time goes on, and as the program fits, you know, that what we bring in, how it may fit, and a lot of it too is relying on the individuals across campus to use their imagination too, to say, that is a program that I think would really benefit my class. Let's bring them as a classroom and have a discussion and really make it part of this syllabus for this class. And it's really trying to think of things in maybe a different way. And it kind of goes along with what you're saying with the teacher workshops. It's trying to look at it in a fresh perspective and getting out of the same old, and do it just a new way, if you can.
And I'd love to put a big plug in for our College of Education. I think, I'm not sure if you and Travis have spoken about it, but this past fall, our College of Education opened their first lab school, and it is Reggio Emilia inspired, which is arts-infused curriculum, and it's quite an amazing place. And so it's part of a partnership with the Indianapolis Public Schools, and I think the magnet applications for the coming school year for 2012-13, I think that date has passed, but people should really look into that. There are lots of ways to get your young people involved with arts at a very young age, and it's an amazing school. Check it out.
Sharon Gamble with Clues Memorial Hall's Education Manager Cassandra Pixie and Community Relations Manager James Kramer. Learn more about their education programs at cluesHall.org. That's C-L-O-W-E-S Hall.org. CluesHall.org. Sharon, do you know what time of year it is?
It's
the most wonderful
it's almost
time
winter.
Of the year. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Are you going to sing?
No, but especially, it is the most wonderful time of the year, especially if you love the Nutcracker, because I think
you cannot swing a cat without hitting a production of the Nutcracker.
I think five performances of the Nutcracker, different companies doing them this weekend. Plus, there's a Messiah. Plus, there's all types of other great shows. There are more events going on, I think, this weekend than any other weekend of the year.
So put on your toe shoes and come with us, tiptoe through
the calendar we call.
What do we do? And Reveille.
And Reveille. There we go. Okay, so just
get out of third position.
A quick update on some of the Nutcrackers that are going on.
That is just not a sentence I've ever heard in my life. I'm just saying.
No, I know. So the School of Ballet's Nutcracker is taking place at the Scottish Rite Cathedral. And then there is also the Indiana Ballet Conservatory's. Their performance is taking place at the IMA's Toby. And the Ballet Theatre of Carmel at Performer's Edge, their performance is taking place, it's a Nutcracker Suite, at Westfield High School. And then No Exit is performing at Big Car Service Center. So those are at least four of them. And I'm sure you could find a few more.
That's crazy. If you can't find a performance and production of Nutcracker that you like, you just aren't trying hard enough.
There you go.
And for something completely different, this Saturday night at 8, the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra is collaborating with the Indianapolis Symphonic Choir and, of course, fabulous soloists for Messiah. If you haven't heard it yet this season, here's your opportunity. 8 o'clock this Saturday night at Clues Memorial Hall.
Perhaps something, I don't know, just a little bit different. It's a very Phoenix Xmas. Oh. Our Goose is Cooked, and that is performing this weekend. That actually continues through next weekend. They've got performances through the 23rd, so still lots of good chances to see it, but certainly Fridays and Saturdays at 8, Sundays at 2, and it is going to be unlike any of the other performances we've already just talked about because it's, slightly irreverent, definitely not traditional, and a whole lot of fun at the Phoenix.
Speaking of things that are a little bit different, you can discover how holidays like Christmas and Hanukkah were celebrated in 1836 if you go out to Connor Prairie by candlelight. Very popular program. You'll visit various homes in Prairie Town during a 60-minute guided tour. You can enjoy the Allman's Hanukkah celebration and meet the German Pennsylvanian Santa Claus. You do need to make reservations, and this is the final weekend, so get more information and make your reservations at connerprairie.org. That's C-O-N-N-E-R, prairie.org, or call 776-6006, but do it soon, up at Connor Prairie.
And, of course, A Christmas Carol continues on at the IRT, and it is part of the program that Printing Partners is doing this year with their Make a Difference program, and they have a tree there, the St. Vincent Health Giving Tree, and you can take a tag from that and purchase a gift on the tree for the Peyton Manning Children's Hospital, which is very, very cool, but also absolutely worth checking out, of course, A Christmas Carol at the IRT.
That is so cool. And if you also, if you have little kids in your life who haven't seen Willy Wonka, don't forget there's a special deal between Booth Tarkington Civic Theater and the IRT. It's called Two's the Season. It's a special package, one ticket to Civic's annual holiday musical Willy Wonka and one ticket to the IRT's A Christmas Carol for just $60. You can purchase those through the IRT's ticket office, and that special deal is valid at all performances. Phone number 635-5252, 635-5252.
That'll be very fun. Mm-hmm. Million Dollar Quartet, that's the Broadway musical that's touring, featuring the music of Johnny Cash, Carl Perkins, Jerry Lee Lewis, and Elvis Presley all together for one night in this true story. Well, that continues through Sunday at the Murat Theater downtown.
You have about one more week to take in the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra's Yuletide celebration. Its theme is Drum roll, please. It's the most wonderful time of the year. And what would not be wonderful about Liz Callaway and Anne Hampton Callaway together? Anne stars from the fan favorite Cirque de la Symphonie.
I've heard it's the best Yuletide ever.
Ooh, that's,
or at least in years,
that's so impressive, because there have been a lot of Yuletides through the years. Those performances continue through December 23rd, next Friday, so make plans soon.
Hey, something going on that is for the shortest day or longest night of the year, this Thursday at the IMA, December 22nd, on the grounds, and it's free from 5:30 to 8 p.m. It's the IMA celebration, their annual winter solstice celebration, and you can join lots of other people outside at the Madeline F. Elder Greenhouse for a brief performance by the Indiana Ballet Conservatory. Again, they're doing Nutcracker this weekend at the Toby, but they'll be performing next week at 6:30, 7:30. There's also ice carving from Indiana Ice Studio. You can, there's going to be reindeer there, and you can create your own sun catcher to observe the lengthening of days, because that's what happens, remember, after the solstice, days start getting longer.
Absolutely.
And then there's all types of historic decorations in the Lily House, and Jan Aldridge Clark, the harpist, will be performing. Should be a lot of fun.
And the greenhouse is available and decorated, and a good place to pick up some last-minute gifts. I'm going to go to that, and I hope they have the beautiful snowy weather that's in the e-newsletter that went out about the solstice.
Wouldn't
celebration at the IMA. Exactly right. Hey, Jolly Days, the Winter Wonderland at the Children's Museum, continues through January 8th. You can slide down the Yule slide, meet Jingles the Jolly Bear, and of course visit with Santa, and you can explore quote-unquote outdoor fun in the snow castle and ice fishing holes.
Ooh.
So, yeah, all sorts of cool stuff going on at the Children's Museum.
Neat. Hey, one thing that I want to mention just as a follow-up to an interview we did a couple weeks ago when I was talking with some of the guys from Dan Ripley's Antique Helper.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, they had their Towson collection, the first part of that exhibit, and it smashed like every record you could even imagine.
Fantastic.
It's the most successful auction they've ever had. An unprecedented hammer total of $1.2 million.
Whoa.
And considered one of the most successful auctions of Native American artifacts in history. Very, very cool. And it's just the first of auctions of the banner stones and bird stones, and stay tuned, because that was only the first part of this collection, and they will be doing the next auction sometime soon.
Excellent. Travis, I know you like animals.
I do.
Uh-huh. And if you haven't...
Like reindeer.
You like reindeer and kitty cats. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't been yet to the Indianapolis Zoo, you can enjoy Christmas at the zoo. Not domestic cats, mind you, but the big cats are out there.
Mm-hmm.
But there are more than 150 larger-than-life light sculptures located around the zoo.
So
thousands
cool.
of beautiful lights. You can enjoy campfire singers, live animal feeds, carolers, and rides. And Christmas at the zoo continues through December 30th. The zoo is closed Mondays, Tuesdays, and Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. But other than that, the animals get a little lonely this time of year,
they'd
enjoy your visit.
Absolutely. Hey, we have a very special treat coming up, but before we do that, Sharon, I got one last thing I want to mention,
mm-hmm.
and that is Saturday night. It's the last Naptown Roller Girl bout for the year, and the title of it is Do You Fear What I Fear? So that takes place at the Pepsi Coliseum, and it is going to be a ton of fun Saturday night. Do You Fear What I Fear?
Okay. And for something completely different, I have one last note. The Indianapolis Men's Chorus Concert Christmas Cards is happening this Saturday night at 8 at Broadway United Methodist Church, and Sunday at 6 at All Saints Episcopal Church. Christmas Cards with the Indianapolis Men's Chorus.
Very good. Now, what's our special treat?
Our special treat is our friend and colleague Matthew Sosi. He never rests. He's always out doing something, and he has directed... it's a stage production of a live radio play.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't know what that is, I encourage you to go see it at Theater on the Square through this weekend. We're going to hear Tristan Rodden as George Bailey. He's actually playing Jake Lawrence, the actor who in turn is playing George Bailey. And Adam Tran, who's playing Harry Jasbo Haywood, the actor who's playing Clarence Oddbury. And some other characters as well.
Easy for you to say. And so after the... Just a reminder, we will be back next week. We will not have our What Do We Do calendar because we have our special holiday show with lots of great holiday music. But right now we've got the special treat from Matthew Sosi's production of
It's a Wonderful Life. Thank you.
Hey, look here. Why'd you want to save me?
Because I'm your guardian angel.
Well, I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
Ridiculous of you to think of killing yourself for money. $8,000.
Yeah, just things like that. How'd you know that?
I told you, I'm your guardian angel. I know everything about you.
Well, you look about the kind of angel I'd get. Hey, what happened to your wings?
I haven't won my wings yet. That's why I'm an angel. Second class.
Oh, I see.
But you can help me earn them, George, by letting me help you.
You wouldn't happen to have 8,000 bucks on you, do you?
Oh, no, we don't use money in heaven.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I keep forgetting. Comes in pretty handy down here, bub.
Oh, tut, tut, tut.
Of course, I found it out a little late. You know I'm worth more dead than alive?
Now look, you mustn't say things like that. Won't wing my wings with that attitude. Now, you just don't know all that you've done. Why, if it hadn't been for you...
Yeah, if it hadn't been for me, everybody'd be a lot better off. My wife, and my kids, and my friends.
This isn't going to be easy.
They'd all be better off if I hadn't been born.
What'd you say?
I said I wish I'd never been born.
George, that's wonderful.
Wonderful?
The idea you just gave me. Well, you've got your wish. You've never been born.
Never been born?
Exactly. No worries, no $8,000 to get, nothing. You simply don't exist.
Hey, wait a minute. This ear of mine. Say something else in that ear.
Something else in that ear. You don't have a bad ear anymore, George. Don't you see? You're not the George Bailey you think you are. You're nobody.
That's the doggonest thing.
Your lips stop bleeding too, George.
Yeah. What do you know about that? What happened? I need a drink. That's what I need. Hey, well, what about you, Angel? You want a drink?
Well, I don't know.
Come on. We'll go as soon as our clothes are dry.
Our clothes are dry.
Hey, so they are. That's funny. Stove must be hotter than I thought. Hey, well, look, let's stroll over to Martini's and then... Oh, excuse me. I'll stroll, you fly.
I haven't won my wings.
Yeah, that's right. A couple of drinks and we'll both fly, huh?
Christ, the Savior is born. Christ, the Savior.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
Flounder Lee, an assistant professor of photography at IUPUI's Heron School of Art and Design, recently returned from a trip to Alaska, where he tried to map the edge of a receding glacier. Travis DiNicola spoke with Flounder about his trip and his work.
Flounder, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you in our studio.
Thanks for having me.
And welcome back. I know you've been traveling a bit. You just got back from Alaska fairly recently, which has been part of the work that you've been doing. If you will, tell me a little bit about why you were in Alaska and what you were doing there.
Well, it's a new line of work that I'm doing, new line of research, creative activity for environmental topics. So I've been working on a different sort of series, but I decided to take the same method of working and apply it to environmental things, which in this case is the retreat of glaciers.
Okay.
So, and the Juneau Icefield research project has been going on in this area, and so there's a lot of data since like the 1940s. So, and almost all the glaciers in this area are retreating pretty rapidly. So, and it's close to a metropolitan area, so easy to get in and out of, or relatively easy for a glacier.
Yeah. Now, was this something you were doing through Heron, or was this just sort of a private trip that you were making for your work, or?
No, actually, this one was actually really well-funded through the Office of the Vice Chancellor for Research. It's Research Support Funds Grant.
Okay.
And so the grant is used to to do a research project and then reapply for external funding. So the external funding I applied for a couple of years ago was to go to Antarctica with the National Science Foundation Antarctic Artist and Writers Program. And so I'm going to sort of build up my work and get some sort of kinks worked out and reapply for that next summer. So
you know, I can't help but thinking back that I remember reading that you actually started out as, was it an aerospace engineer?
Yeah.
That was your original major in school?
And for a year, but okay, I wanted to do that for forever, so yeah.
You know, but so now you're an assistant professor of photography at Heron, and certainly a very conceptual artist in the work that you do. I mean, a lot of it's photography-based, but some of it I've seen different examples of your work, often involving maps, science, history. You bring a lot of disciplines into this.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy the, you know, making the work, but I like to sort of think about it. And like, I've always been a really investigative person, and that's why I think I wanted to do in the engineering thing. I always was interested in science, and so sort of bringing that interest into my art making. I mean, I don't claim to be doing science or anything like that, but it's sort of using the same mindset. So like, I set up really strict parameters for myself and things like that when I'm making the work.
So in going up to Alaska and looking at the retreating glaciers, I mean, was part of your work, are you taking photographs of that? Are you documenting? Do you have a sense of what the final product's going to be? Or is this just still sort of part of the process of exploring maybe how you create a work out of that situation?
Well, I knew exactly what I wanted to do when I went up there.
Yeah.
Getting up there and doing it was a different story because just the landscape was it's so harsh. I mean, Alaskans are just a different sort of people, I think. So I had to make some changes to it on the fly. But I actually have a remote control helicopter that I use that I got through this grant. So I was flying that. And
that has a camera?
It has a camera.
Okay.
And so it does video and photo. So I was shooting photo and video through the aerial somewhat. And we actually had to take actual helicopters around a couple times to get in and out of places. So it was a combination of that and on-the-ground work. And we actually borrowed kayaks from the University of Alaska South and went out in the lake and stuff like that. So.
And to do that, I mean, using both the remote control and the real helicopters, using the kayaks, I mean, that's to get to places you just couldn't get otherwise, to get photographs of the retreating glacier? Or I mean, why go to that extreme?
Yeah, it's sort of to see it from a new perspective and to... Part of it is to get places where you couldn't get before, because I was interested in going to the lines where the different points where the glaciers were. So like 1948,
where they've measured it, and
where they measured
how it's retreating.
So I was going to go there and sort of make these images at those spots. And sometimes you can only get to those places via helicopter or you know, kayak or some other way.
So when you said that things changed a bit because of just the harshness of the landscape once you got up there, how did things change a bit? I mean, was it just having used different tools or sort of reconfigure your approach?
Part of it, like, I wanted to actually follow the lines, like the terminus points of the glacier, like, from each of these times. I wanted to follow it, sort of walk it. It's because my work is somewhat performance-based. But when I got there, I realized, like, oh, wait, that goes right into the middle of the river or things like that. And that's where the helicopter came into an extent.
I see. Okay.
But it was windy and rainy the entire time we were there, so it's hard. It's like you just have to wait for that perfect break. And so we get to fly it some, but I have an assistant. That's why I say we, so... but it was a little difficult. So,
you know, I mean, other work that I'm familiar with that you've done, I mean, maps, geography, of course, is a big part of it, but mapping geography and sort of putting, you know, your physical presence in a landscape or sort of looking at how maps, you know, show different things. I mean, one piece I'm thinking of is just sort of a kind of a fun, easy to explain piece is Plymouth Also. Is that the correct title?
Yes.
And it's a piece that was part of a series of work done in different windows. And my understanding of it, and this was in Plymouth, England, right?
Yes.
And so it's a map of the United States that essentially points out all the different places in the United States that are named Plymouth, not just Massachusetts, but all the places.
Yeah, I just, you know, we're very European in origin, and where people here like to think of us as, you know, American as far back, you know, like we're so European. And we're just going over, and I travel a lot in Europe, and you realize that, and the things like the names of Plymouth, you know, that's a very European thing. And so I got this call for Window Works in Plymouth and try to figure out what it was I wanted to do, and that was one of the things. And I love maps, like you said. Mm-hmm. So that's something I came up with. That one's sort of related to my work, but it's very different than most of my other stuff. As far as I don't usually do, like, it's a drawing. Even though I didn't draw it, it's really a drawing. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I mean, you are, I mean, certainly, you know, photography is the subject that you teach at Heron, and most of your work does include either still photographs or video, and that's a big part of it as well, right?
Yeah. I mean, my work is generally based around that. I mean, my degrees are in photography and, mm-hmm. and sort of electronic media, but all the way from the very beginning when I first started doing photography, and in school at least, I was doing performative sort of works and sculptural and installations and things like that. So my work is always based around photo, but it doesn't necessarily always include photo. I mean, performance is a big thing that I don't do enough of, but I think of these works that I do when I'm doing photographic mapping as part performance. So that's why, you know, like, mm-hmm. see people doing work with, like, Google Maps or, you know, things like that. And it's just not the kind of work I could do. It's like I have to go to the place and sort of experience it. And that's part of the process, is going and being there in the spot.
And the way that you're describing performance, it's not so much that you're taking a performance piece into a gallery or to a theater space or performance space that you're showing in front of an audience. It's that what you're doing, such as trying to walk the lines of where the ice flow had receded from, and documenting that is your performance. Not that necessarily anyone else other than maybe an assistant or a park ranger is going to see you do that, but that's the performance that sort of leads to the physical art. Is that a fair way of describing it?
Yeah. So it's not just the work that I'm putting up in the gallery. It's not just documentation.
Mm-hmm.
It's the goal of the performance is to come out with this.
Okay.
So it's like... yeah, so sometimes I actually do work where you will see the performance, like in a gallery or something, but most of the time it's where I'm doing the performance at the space. And you pretty much nailed it there, the way you said it. It's a performance for me, and then the mm-hmm. outcome is the work that the viewer will see. So.
Okay, good. That certainly helps me understand, I mean, a lot of what you're doing, and sort of gives it, you know, a lot of perspective where I can really kind of see you actually, you know, walking around in Alaska and trying to, you know, sort of retrace, you know, where the glaciers were. Now, you're also involved with... locally, I mean, a number of other shows and exhibits and things coming up. What's going on right now? We're recording this at the end of November, airing it middle of December. But what else are you involved in right now?
Well, I run a gallery in Fountain Square called Space Camp Micro mm-hmm. Gallery. It's a yeah. Murphy building. So I founded that, and then I have a couple of co-galleries that some of my alumni, Heron alumni, and we have a show called Mappable that's open December and January. And it's just, I wanted to see what other artists are doing with maps, and I'm really interested in that too. Because I think of curatorial practice as sort of curating, making shows, putting together shows as part of my, sort of part of my artistic practice. It's not a separate thing. So I'm looking into things that I'm interested in and making myself, like performance and installation and photo and, you know, all these sorts of things. Seeing what other people are doing, and that informs my work as well as being able to get work out there for other people to see. So,
tell me a bit more about Space Camp.
Well, it's tiny. That's why it's called Micro Gallery. Mm-hmm. But our slogan is like bringing, it's small and, what is it, small? Now I'm going to get it completely wrong. Small, it's small work, big ideas or something.
Okay.
I'm completely massacring it there. But it's basically, we're thinking it's idea-based, it's conceptually-based. We're really trying to bring outside artists into Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. I think it's pretty easy to show as a local artist here, and we see plenty of that, and it's great that we're supporting local artists in so many ways, but I really think that the art world needs to have this sort of circular flow that goes on where we send our artists elsewhere, and then we bring artists in so that we can see what else is going on.
And see what other people are doing, yeah.
No isolationism.
Mm-hmm. So. How do you make that a part of the work that you do at Heron as an instructor there? I mean, in terms of both, you know, sharing, you know, outside work and new work with your students, or I'm also curious about, you know, in your photography classes, how do you, you know, bring things like, you know, other contemporary arts and making performance maybe a part of it, or you know, how do you approach your classes?
Well, it's you know, we're very multidisciplinary in our photo department. I mean, we just started an MFA program also, and we're actually called it Photography and Intermedia because we're not thinking of just strictly photo or anything like that. So that's been a grounding from the very beginning, and my colleagues are both feel that strongly about that too. All my colleagues feel strongly about that too. So as far as how I use my research and my curatorial and all this stuff in there, I'm able to see this work and see, experience cultures and bring that, those sorts of ideas back to my classes. I'm not just looking at it in books or just seeing what other people have to say in a textbook or something. I'm able to actually see what other people in the contemporary art world are making and people that are at the stage that my artists will, you know, my student artists will be at in a couple of years. So I'm able to direct them in better ways as opposed to doing this curatorial thing. By getting the submissions, I see what people a year out of school or 5 years out of school are doing, and I'm able to translate that into something I can show the students and talk to them. And I actually sometimes actually sit with them through submissions. Like I'll take all the submissions I get for a show and sit with them and show them what other people are doing and how they're actually presenting that too, because it's professional practice is part of what we teach too.
And part of that training. So let me jump ahead a little bit. You know, you just got back from Alaska. You mentioned possibly looking at going to Antarctica in the future. Is that still on the schedule? Or are you also looking at other places? You know, Arctic Circle, Greenland, Svalbard, Iceland.
I'm always looking looking where I want to go and do work. It's just, like I said, experiencing these other cultures just changes the way that I view everything. And so I think it's really important to me. Like 2 years ago, I led a study abroad with another colleague to Germany. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking. So when I'm doing travel, I'm doing my research and everything, but I'm also sort of looking for places that I could bring my students or bring ideas at least back for them to see. So, yeah, I'd like to do the Antarctica thing. You know, I don't really like the cold weather. I think I could deal with it for a few days because it's Antarctica. You know, it's one of those few places that sort of unspoiled at this point. And that's what the work that I want to do there, that I propose to do there, is about this unspoiled nature of it. So, and trying to keep it that way.
Very cool. Flounder, thanks a lot for coming into Art of the Matter. It's been great having you on the show and learning about your work and travels.
Well, thanks for having me.
Travis DiNicola with artist Flounder Lee. Lee is an assistant professor of photography at IUPUI's Heron School of Art and Design and runs the Space Camp Micro Gallery in the Murphy Building. You can learn more at his website, photoflounder.com. That's photoflounder.com.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 when we'll have our annual Art of the Matter holiday show.
Matthew Sosi will join us and we'll feature a stocking's worth of local holiday music and a few special gifts as well.
It'll be the perfect complement to your sleigh ride. So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.